Primero Dios. It's a phrase that I've learned from our Mexican community here at the parish. They say it often at the end of conversations, usually saying goodbye. And what it means, literally, is God first. But what they mean by it is kind of what we say in English, but waxed clear or cleaned out of any religious reference, lest anyone be offended. And it's what we say in English. I hope so. Well, let's see. God willing, maybe, if you were to be so daring to say such a thing to someone. Primero Dios. And the idea that struck me as I would hear that phrase often is that God first. God first. It's what the scriptures are telling us today. Primero Dios. God above all things. I remember when I was in school, in an honors class, the teacher had gained a certain confidence, a familiarity and closeness with some of the student council leaders in the class, and she trusted us. And when we would have an exam, she would actually leave the classroom, and as some of the students found out, would leave the answers to the test in a folder on her desk. Well, you know where this is going. And so the classmates quickly ran over as soon as she stepped out the door, opened up the book, and started calling out the answers so everyone could fill it in. For weeks, she was amazed at how well we were doing. But we're an honors class. Shouldn't we all be getting A's? I wouldn't listen. I would fill it out to the best of my ability. I studied. I did my best. And oftentimes, I would get a look from her like, "What's wrong with you, Eric? Everyone else is getting A's. Why are you getting a B?" I thought to myself, God first. I need to be honest. My salvation is more important than an A in some random class. Of course, my classmates were not happy with the fact that I didn't join them in cheating. Maybe they were a little happy, so it would look like not everybody was cheating, and maybe no one was cheating, therefore, because Eric got a B. And so I could get, as a result of sticking with what is right and good and honest, even hatred or pressure from my peers. Primero Dios. Being popular with my peers was second to being loved by my God and loving Him in return. Maybe you experience this at work. People have somebody else punch in for you, even though you're not there yet. Or punch out for you, even though you've left a long time before. Or they're doing their work as slow as possible, making the same amount. They don't care. It's just about the money. Or they're slandering and gossiping about one another. And you have a choice. Do I join in? Or do I walk away from the gossip and slander? Do I refuse to participate in the stealing of the company? Who do we work for? Is it for our sad, measly salary? Or is it for the Lord? Do we realize that when we work for love of God, we're actually cooperating in His own creative power? Yes, it's true. At the moment of original sin, work was a punishment. Adam and Eve didn't have to work to eat. Everything they needed, God provided for them. And as part of the punishment of their original sin, God made Adam work at the sweat of his brow for the food he would eat. But Christ comes along and redeems this condemnation, this punishment, into the means of our salvation, working out our salvation in and through Him, literally. So that when we work out of love for God, we give Him glory, we participate in the goodness of creation, restoring, cleaning, fixing, healing, and we participate in His own redemptive work. I remember working at Chick-fil-A and just sweeping and mopping the floor. It felt good to look back and say, that place was filthy, now it's clean, I did that. Yes, I was making $4.25 an hour, minimum wage back then, but it felt good. I didn't do it for the money. I did it for the Lord. The money helped, but for the Lord. I did it to the best of my ability, not because I was worried about my boss at the restaurant, but my boss who is in heaven, who sees all that we do in secret and will one day make it known, as we hear in today's gospel. Nothing is concealed that will not be revealed, nor secret that will not be known. Primero Dios, before our salary, before popularity, before our grades. But what about in our marriages? The spouse that we wrongfully chose to marry outside the church, hoping that maybe one day he or she would marry us in the church? Or the spouse who we know are doing things that are wrong, and we're complicit because we help or we turn a blind eye, what then? What then when we have to choose between our spouse and our God? Well, when Matthew wrote this gospel, where Jesus tells them, do not be afraid, fear no one of those who can kill the body, he was saying this because the audience that was reading Matthew's gospel was being rounded up, Jewish converts to Christianity, rounded up by their own people, by their own police, religious police, and being imprisoned and even killed. And if it weren't their own people rounding them up, imprisoning and killing them, it was the most powerful empire the world had ever known, the Romans, rounding them up, torturing and killing them. They were full of fear. And Jesus' words in Matthew's gospel to them was a strong consolation. Do not be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows. Do not be afraid of those who can kill the body but cannot kill the soul. They had to choose between their life or their God. To die out of love for Christ or to live and be separated from him forever. That's a harder decision, I think, than even the difficult marriage decisions we have in the day-to-day. Primero Dios, before their very lives, God first. And so in our marriages, we have this choice sometimes, unfortunately, that we have to choose between the Lord and our spouse. It should be a no-brainer, at least on paper. But for many of us, it's very difficult. We think that somehow we're doing good by compromising our faith, our conscience, and our morals to accommodate a man or woman who isn't even our husband or wife in God's eyes, according to the sacrament of marriage, which is the only valid marriage for Catholics. Or even if they are, we think, well, I'll deal with this for the sake of our children. While our children are exposed to verbal or emotional abuse or our addiction and all the problems that come from it. And then we end up harming them rather than helping them. Primero Dios. It is better to choose God above all things, regardless of the consequences, than to compromise ourselves for something else. The choice is ours, and it's something that we experience even in the day to day. You're at the supermarket. You realize they didn't charge you for something. It's free. It's their mistake. Can we be able, in little things, to say, no, no, you missed this. You didn't charge me for this. Because God sees what is in the secret, what is in the darkness. Everything will be that is concealed will be revealed. Primero Dios. When we're honest about little things, we will be honest and faithful about great things. And so ultimately, I conclude with this comparison that Paul gives us in the second letter today to the Romans. Will we be as our first Adam was or as the second Adam? The choice is ours. Through the first Adam, Paul tells the Romans, sin entered the world. Now, some of you who are familiar with the book of Genesis and original sin would say, well, wait a minute, Father. It was Eve who ate the fruit first. It was Eve who partook of the forbidden fruit. Well, why are we talking about Adam? And historically, a lot of people, especially with a very chauvinistic mindset, put the blame on Eve. It's the woman's fault. There's sickness and death and baldness and fatness and illness and all kinds of problems. It's Eve's fault because she ate the fruit and God told her not to. She was the first to eat it. I mean, if you listen to the book of Genesis, even Adam admits that. Adam, what have you done? The woman you put here with me, it's your fault. She gave me the fruit and I ate it. It's her fault and your fault. I'm innocent. That was Adam's argument when God confronts him. But if you go back a little bit before the first sin, or Eve's sin rather, we hear about how God created Adam first. And he tells Adam to protect and tend the garden. You are responsible to protect this property. And then he gives him Eve as his equal, taken from his rib, side by side, and says, be fruitful and multiply. This is your gift, your equal. Protect, provide. You are in charge of this garden. Well, how did the serpent enter? God allowed the serpent to enter the garden, or rather allowed the serpent to approach the garden. Adam sees this serpent and realizes instinctually it is smarter than him and more powerful than him. He doesn't have the concept of death, but he knows in some way this is not going to end well. His job was to expel the serpent from the garden. Protect your wife. Protect this garden. Lay down your life if you must, but protect it. All he had to do was turn his back. The sin of omission, what we call traditionally. He simply turned his back to this threat and let it enter. Adam sinned first by letting that serpent enter the garden. How do we know this? One, after Eve eats of the fruit, who does God go to confront about what's happened? Not Eve. He goes to Adam. Adam, where are you? I was naked and so I hid. Hid from me, who gave you life and love and food and freedom and made you in my image and likeness? Why would you hide from me? Why would you be afraid of me? What have I done to cause you harm? God goes to Adam because Adam sinned first. How do we know this is true? Because the new Adam, Jesus Christ, does what the first would not do. The new Adam confronts the serpent of sin and death and lays down his life for his bride, the church. Read Paul's letter to the Ephesians chapter 5. To preserve her immaculate and pure and holy, he lays down his life. He confronts the serpent of sin and death and says, "You shall not enter. You shall not defile my bride. I will lay down my life to redeem her and all of humanity." We are his bride through baptism, the church. Christ, the second Adam, did what the first would not do. He would rather die for us than break God's commands. Primero Dios. And so it is that the choice is now yours as you leave this building. Will you live as the first Adam, sinning by omission, simply turning your back, not doing what is necessary, not laying down your life, not standing up for what is right and true and good, regardless of the consequences, and therefore allowing sin to wreak havoc in your heart, in your home, in our society? Or will you follow the second Adam, who is Christ the Lord, who tells you and I today, fear no one. Nothing is concealed that will not be revealed, nor secret that will not be known. What I say to you in the darkness, speak in the light. What you hear whispered here, proclaim on the rooftops. Do not be afraid of those who can kill the body. You are called to be a prophet, like Jeremiah. Uneducated as he was, a tender of sycamore trees, a very basic, thoughtless, mindless job, with no training, with no expertise in theology or being a prophet, young, way too young, and yet God calls him, go and tell my people. And Jeremiah does, unqualified, too young, incapable, he speaks God's word in the world, because it's not about him, it's about the Lord. Primero Dios. And so this 12th Sunday of ordinary time, the Lord invites us to seek courage and strength from him in this Eucharist, to live what he calls us to, a life of freedom, a life without fear, a life when confronted with choices, always chooses from the smallest decisions to the greatest. Primero Dios.